Ever heard of the Karpeles Manuscript Library Museum? It's relatively new to St. Louis and is located on Russell near Grand. It's unusual in many ways and is one of more than a dozen in various cities around the country. St. Louis is the largest of those cities, by the way. The museums house unusual documents, documents like the original draft of the Bill of Rights, a Babe Ruth baseball contract, Albert Einstein notes, and so on. Joining me in studio to tell us more about the Karpeles Museum is Kerry Manderbach, homegrown director of the St. Louis branch. Kerry, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
This is kind of a St. Louis secret. I've never heard of the Karpeles Museum, but it sounds fascinating.
Oh, it is definitely. We've been a little off the radar, and we're hoping to correct that by putting more publicity out there. We got a little bit of a slow start, but now we're picking up speed.
Well, you deal just with documents at the museum and library, right?
Yes. It's sort of different from a traditional museum. We don't have artifacts that you might expect, like suits of armor or things like that. We deal in documents and manuscripts of a historical nature.
Now, my understanding is that there are 13 or so of these across the country. Is that correct, 12 or 13?
There's 14. The 13th one. That's still in progress down in Alvin, Texas. It hasn't opened yet, but it will soon, I believe.
So tell us about Mr. Karpeles and his project to get these museums and libraries stashed all over the country.
Well, he's an interesting fellow, Dr. Karpeles. He's originally from the California area. He had moved as a young man to Minnesota, and that's where he received his education. He got degrees in mathematics, became a mathematics teacher, actually, and then he became associated as a researcher with the Remington Rand Univac Corporation. That's the company that basically invented computers here in the United States. And he ended up being transferred out to California under one of their divisions. He took a teaching position out there, and then he became associated with General Electric. And while at General Electric in California, he developed the first optical recognition software program. He was able to have a computer scan checks and digitize those figures so people wouldn't have to do the old-fashioned key-punching method to input data. He received his master's and later his PhD out there. And then he started dabbling in California real estate, which can be rather lucrative. And so the story on the museums is sort of fascinating because he got married while he was in California to Marcia Mirsky. They had four children, and they went on outings as often as they could, like a lot of families. And they ended up going to the Huntington Museum out there, where there was an art exhibit featuring Blue Boy and other famous paintings.
Gainsborough.
And his children sort of yawned through it. They were school age. And he happened to notice there was an exhibit on historical manuscripts there. So he went to look at that. And his children became fascinated by the handwriting of some of these figures, like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. And so they spent the rest of the afternoon basically looking at these documents and not really paying much attention to the art exhibit. And Dr. Karpeles asked the curator about the documents and why he had not seen many documents in all of his other outings to museums. And he was told that basically most documents like that, most manuscripts, are in the hands of private collectors and universities. And so Dr. Karpeles asked, well, what about the the Smithsonian and places like that? And he said he was told, well, basically they don't have many documents. So that sort of made him think and he became attracted to the documents himself, and he started to see about how he could purchase some. So he went to Christie's and Sotheby's and inquired, and he started bidding. And the first document he purchased was a draft of the Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. And the reason drafts are so important is because they sort of show the thought process that goes into the finished document and some of the compromises that may have been made to come up with something that's acceptable.
Number one, I'll never call him Karpeles again because obviously I miss Karpeles is the way it's pronounced.
Karpeles, yes.
Well, why aren't documents such as this, the draft of the Emancipation Proclamation and the draft of the Bill of Rights, why aren't these in the National Archives? How is it happened that they're out there?
Well, the National Archives didn't actually exist until around 1934. So by that time, these documents were in the hands of others. And so that's why many of them never really made it into the public types of spaces and museums.
The variety of documents is really quite astonishing. When we talk about a Babe Ruth baseball contract, for instance, and some of Mark Twain's drafts, if you will, and some other things, a tremendous variety here.
Right. He's very democratic about the things that he collects. He's basically got a wide variety of interests. So we've had an exhibit on the Wright brothers, for example, a lot of their manuscripts. We've had what we call the Adams family, which was John, Abigail, and their son, John Quincy.
Not from the New Yorker magazine.
Right, not from the New Yorker magazine or the television series, right. By the way. But yes, there's a wide range of documents that he owns, and he has the largest private collection in the world, I believe, over 1 million pieces.
And again, my understanding is that these documents kind of rotate from site to site, that they're not permanently housed anywhere.
Right. We have a rotating schedule about every 4 months or so. We're probably going to have an exhibit on Charles Dickens maybe in September. I believe that's coming through. And then our exhibit, the one we have now, which is the Presidents of the Continental Congress, also known as the Presidents Before George Washington, which may be a big surprise to most people that there were people known as presidents before the father of our country. That exhibit is going on to one of our other museums this fall.
Many of the documents that you've cited are old, and preserving them must be a bit of a trick. Is this a complication for you at Karplus?
Well, it depends on the document itself. Some are in rather precarious condition where they shouldn't be transported, and of those, reproductions have been created that he circulates. But there are many original documents that we also receive. So it's sort of a 50-50 proposition where some are reproductions and some are the originals. We have over $100,000 worth of documents at the museum presently.
Talk about some of the others. You mentioned one set, but what do you have there right now?
Well, right now we're featuring the Presidents of the Continental Congress. Might be a little surprising to some people, but before George Washington, there were actually 15 gentlemen who were considered presidents, and they were presidents under, for example, the Articles of Confederation. Mm-hmm. And before that, they were basically called presidents because they presided over Congress, the Continental Congress. And so while they didn't have any real power, the same kind of power that George Washington later had, they did chair the Congress at the time, which turned out to be a revolutionary Congress because we went to war during that time with Great Britain. So many of these men served their country in that aspect, some for short periods of time, some for 2 or 3 years. And the process was that the delegates to Congress would elect a president to preside. But a lot of important things happened during the time that these gentlemen held their positions. And basically, we have documents relating to some of the things that happened. And then we have other interesting items like I believe we have a 4-pound note. In those days, of course, we were still using British currency before we started printing our own. And so we have one of those notes that was signed by Peyton Randolph, who was the first of these extra, as we call them, presidents.
Do you have in your displays anything relating to local history, Illinois, St. Louis, Missouri, that sort of thing?
Well, we're trying to get more of that. We have a few items. We have a letter from Franklin Roosevelt to a rabbi in St. Louis, congratulating them on an anniversary on that had to do with the first synagogue west of the Mississippi, which was located here in St. Louis. And we have that letter preserved, that original letter. We also have something that Abraham Lincoln signed. It's a proclamation that deals with, I believe his name was William Cuddy, who helped protect the arsenal here from some Confederate sympathizers at the very beginning of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be getting more local manuscripts, but right now the bulk of it is handled by a special room that we have in the museum, which was given over to a local group, nonprofit group, by Dr. Karpeles. And that group is known as the St. Louis Media History Foundation. And they basically preserve and collect and exhibit local media history that has to do with broadcasting. It can be public relations. It can be advertising, anything of a local nature. And currently their gallery houses an exhibit called Food in the Media, which has to do with some local advertising agencies that had advertised like for a local concern like Pet Milk, for example, which is here in St. Louis, some of their advertising in the 30s and 40s and 1950s. And then we actually have a radio program running. It's running in a loop, which is a cooking show called the Mary Lee Taylor Program, which ran from the late 30s into the early 50s when television sort of took over. And so we have that running in the background in that room. And Mary Lee Taylor is basically she talks about various recipes and how to run an efficient kitchen. And that was especially important during the war years when things were rationed. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have ingredients always available. But Pet Milk was always available.
Was there a St. Louis Public Radio wing to this part of your building?
Well, we did. The first exhibit that they had concerned the radio station known as KADI. We called it KADI.
KADI, oh yeah.
KADI Radio. And Richard Miller, who had owned KADI Radio.
Sure.
And his wife generously donated his collection of memorabilia. And we had a lot of artwork of the advertising that happened at the time when they were in their battle with the Rock of St. Louis, as it was called at the time, and radio station KSOQ, and a couple of other also-rans that were going on in the 70s.
Well, let's not give too much publicity to other radio stations, Gary.
Right.
Yeah. Getting back to the St. Louis-specific documents that they have, will they be rotated as well? I mean, if we're going to be going to the 14 museums around the country, or will they stay here because they're so specific to this area?
I believe they're going to stay right here.
Yeah.
And we're actually working on a small space called the St. Louis Room, where we're going to feature those particular exhibits sort of separate from the rest of the display, although it'll be just a few footsteps away. Mm-hmm. But it'll have its own space, and hopefully we'll be able to also include certain sorts of things like maybe paintings of local sorts of attractions like Crown Candy and the water towers that we have in St. Louis. As a matter of fact, we're right across the street from Reservoir Park.
Reservoir, sure.
Yes, which features the South St. Louis Water Tower.
Russell near Grand,
yes,
right in the old
exactly.
Compton Hill Reservoir.
Compton Hill.
What are some of the really, I'll call it off-the-wall things that are stashed in these various museums? I mean, I mentioned the Babe Ruth contract. I mean, who would know, for instance, that stuff like that is out there?
Well, we also have, we don't have it on display at the moment, but we still have it, the draft of the Confederate Constitution. So that's sort of unusual. A lot of people didn't realize that the Confederate States of America had their own constitution.
Sure.
So we do have that. And that was very interesting last summer when a lot of controversy was happening over the Confederate flag and whether it should be flown or recognized at all. So a lot of people were interested in that document and seeing what that first page was all about and what they had to say, their statements, for example.
What kind of traffic do you get at the museum? Who are the people who are coming to see you?
Well, we have a diverse a group of people. A lot of times we have people who are jogging by and in the park or walking by and they see us and they think, well, what is that? We try to advertise in our window area. We try to Right now we have a display that's called The Stepfathers of Our Country, which is sort of a takeoff on the father of the country, George Washington. Mm-hmm. And we have a portrait of George standing there sort of motioning over to these other portraits of the 15 gentlemen who were presidents before he was. And before that, we had a kind of a clever little poster concerning the Adams family, which had the characters of Lurch and Uncle Fester with the portraits of the real Adams behind mm-hmm. them. And that sort of helps draw people in because they're thinking, well, what is this? And they come in to see what we have. We also have people who are history buffs who have heard of us through various means. We try to get the word out by having brochures at the libraries, for example, and people do come and see us specifically to see who we are and what we have. We have tour groups that contact us. We just had the Ten Toes Express, which is a group that's dedicated to walking and using public transportation, and they did a tour through the neighborhood, and they specifically wanted to come and see us.
Mr. Karpolis is fairly insistent on the types of places where these documents are housed across the country. He looks for historic buildings, correct?
He does indeed, yes. He owns a great many Christian Scientist churches.
And helps to renovate them?
Yes, he does. Yes. Yeah. Some are old bank buildings even, but they're the style of the architectural style is wonderful to look at. There are several examples online on his website of some of these buildings, and they're marvelous. We're a newer facility, actually. The building itself isn't newer, of course. We're the former Third Church of Christ Scientist. That building was built in 1911, housed the Christian Scientists for about 70 years, as a matter of fact. And then when their congregation moved west into the county, the Baptist congregation came in and took over. They were called the New Paradise Missionary Baptist Church. They were in the building for about 30 years. And then they, too, migrated out west to a building that was a little bit more economical for them to take care of. And so the building that we're in sat vacant for a little while, and Dr. Karpolis had one of his agents purchase it, much to the delight of the neighborhood, who
sure.
were a little worried about a vacant building being in the area. And we've been renovating it since January of 2015 and opened in August of 2015. And so this is our third exhibit that we've had.
We've had less than a minute left. Admission is free. We should certainly point that to the Media Museum as well.
Yes, the entire building free to come in. We're open Tuesday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Everyone's welcome to come down. Please come and see us. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I think you'll find something of interest if you come down.
When do you recycle next, and what's coming in, if you can tell me in 15 seconds?
Yes, in September we expect to have manuscripts and documents pertaining to Charles Dickens.
That's what's up next. Well, it sounds like a fascinating place. We've got to get down there and have a look. I want to thank you, Kerry Munderbach, for being with us and telling us about the Karpolis Museum, Library and Museum.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Great talking to you. Thank you so much. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.